Hey, there goes my other... Finally, I have my other ear on this headphone is working.
It's like when you're flying and one ear pops and then the other...
Oh, yeah. Or when you're flying, you just get, like, mono on your...
Mono?
Which if you ever get mono on a plane, you don't really want that. Well, talk a little bit so I can hear if I...
Hello, Dave.
Oh, you're in stereo there.
Can you hear... Am I in stereo?
Ow! Ow! The hell is wrong with you? I'm going to lower your mic now. How are you, Jeff?
I'm fine. We're having a snowstorm.
I looked out the window. It's a rainstorm at the moment.
I was driving. It was like, it's like snow's hitting a window and then immediately turning to, it's like going.
And then, but it's still melting because we haven't hit that point where it's 29 degrees.
32
yet.
Degrees.
Yeah. Well, 32 is still going to melt. It seems to take,
because
like, to get on the
car's running it over.
Yeah. So that's why it stays on the grass, but not on the,
There you go.
I didn't know. I always wondered about that.
It's called friction.
It's called what?
Friction creates heat.
Where's friction?
Tires, road surface.
Oh, well, no. Even without the tires, isn't it more likely to stick on grass than it does?
Well, because the road surface also retains the heat.
Oh, so when a car comes over it, it tends to be.
That's why we make roads out of blacktop and not out of cement.
Because cement is colder and it doesn't do anything.
Cement will freeze
and crack, or whatever. I don't know. I'm not a stonemason. I'm not gonna.
No, but I know that blacktop is, you know, it's also it's also.
I like the little hand motion you're making for blacktop. It's like wee. It's like Marcel Marceau-ish doing a bird.
Right. Poor Marcel Marceau is dead.
Yes, he is. He's silent. So is Edmund Hillary. We lost him. Did you know he went up there with someone else?
Tenzing.
You remembered. You knew that.
Tenzing, yes.
Because everyone knows that Sir Edmund Hillary, Mount Everest, he blah, 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 got to the top.
Well, because I've been to the mountain.
That's right. When
I went
two
to
years
Nepal
ago, right?
A couple of years ago. I had the worst trip of my life.
Wait, remind me. Why was it so terrible?
Because it just rained and we were going up. We went up mountains in the pitch black in the rain and it was dangerous. And they kept looking at me like I was holding the car back. Because they couldn't get up certain hills.
Oh, come
on.
But were you... You saw Everest. I assume you didn't attempt any part of
it. We flew by it.
Oh. Okay. Was it really big?
It's huge.
How long did it take Hillary to do that thing when he first did
Probably
it?
Probably weeks.
Weeks. Wow.
Because you go from base camp to base camp.
I think
there are three base camps.
Well, no. I saw that play at the Irish Rep about Tom Crean, who was attacking... Was it Everest or another mountain? Well, no, he's the pole. He was looking for the pole. And it was all about, you know, you get to one base camp, some people would stay behind, a couple people would go forward and forward and forward until finally with attrition you only have two or three people
on the
final
Hillary
track.
And Kensing were the only two people who got to the summit
at that point. Yeah.
And people have really, I mean, it's really, really dangerous. I mean, they have all these crevasses that they have to take, you have to climb ladders across.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you know, people die all the time. I mean, even experienced climbers die, get lost.
And the reason people do that, well, because it's there. Is that what
it's right. It's exactly why they do
because
it.
Because it's there. I don't know. Yeah, if there's poison in my medicine cabinet, I'm not going to drink it because it's there.
They want to conquer it.
Mm.
They want to just say they've been to the highest
point. Okay, you know what? Well, Edmund Hillary did it. Now, why does anybody else have to?
Because they want to do it, too.
You know, he planted his flag. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, you understand why everybody wants to get to the moon. Because you can put the garbage there. You can colonize it. You can probably bounce satellites.
You probably put garbage on the summit of Mount Everest. Do it free.
Yeah, I guess you could. Yeah, right. You know.
Make a very cool sculpture.
Well, you always figure that the summit is a point, don't you? You always figure
the summit of Everest is kind of like, it just kind of summits, and it's like a peak, but it's like a razor edge peak.
Well, I assume he didn't stand right on that.
He did.
Really?
Yeah.
I would assume that's the most dangerous moment.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I mean, if he's if it literally comes to like a pyramid.
I did it. Whoops.
Yeah. Look, Ma. Ma.
Wait. Take one. Someone's taking the picture.
Step back.
Kensing, take one step back.
Yeah. Ah. Oh, well. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me just remind you that in 10 minutes, Dave's Gone By begins. Jeff will be joining me for that.
This nonsense will be over.
And we'll have very different nonsense for you, including Inside Broadway, where we'll look at the news on and off Broadway, as well as I'll be reviewing a new play by David Henry Wong, the
Which
guy who wrote M. Butterfly. It closed this afternoon, It had been extended for a while, but I didn't get a chance to catch
it's
it.
Because Dave
till
didn't
last
like
week.
It. Dave didn't see it, so they closed it.
Yeah, and when I finally did see it, well, you'll have to... You'll
well,
have
then
to
they said his life's not worth living. Dave saw it already.
Well, so I'll be talking about it, because it's definitely worth talking about. And then, for the rest of Dave's Gone By, very, very special guest... This is the guest we were supposed to have on last month.
Well, let's not go too much into her.
Well,
because then I'll have to explain rotten things.
There's nothing rotten about it. It was just a, she was supposed to be calling in live. Or actually, I was supposed to be calling her.
Oh, it was just
I couldn't get to her, but she was on stage. She was still finishing a concert.
Poo-poo, who's more important? Us or her
friend? I agree. I totally agree. And she apologized profusely later.
And then talked forever. Talk through my show last week.
I know. Well, yeah, yeah. We kind of, once we got talking, we got on a roll because I had a lot to ask her. She's a pretty major singer-songwriter. Her name is Issa.
Who?
Well, better known, formerly known as Jane Sibbery.
Who?
But she changed her name to Issa.
Who?
You ever hear the song Calling All Angels?
No.
You never heard the song Calling All Angels? It's a
no.
Beautiful, beautiful song. Wow. Just to tell you how windy it is outside, the door to the... main room of the radio station here just kind of breezed open. And I'm not talking like the outside door. I'm talking like the inside door
wait,
all the way down the hall.
Who opened the outside door?
Nobody.
That just opened?
That could be the wind. And the wind is kind of... Yeah.
Or it was Jane Sibbery.
The ghost of Jane Sibbery wants her name back. She's like, she's not happy with Issa now. So Jane Sibbery's like, no... What kind of name is Issa? I would bring Sibbery back.
See, that was someone who died this week.
Well, anyway, I had a marvelous conversation.
All right,
with
and you'll
Issa.
Hear it because it lasts forever.
And well, and also we tucked some songs in there, too. So you will hear tonight at 11, Issa, a.k.a., formerly K.A., Jane Sibbery at 11. So, okay, but before then, we have a few minutes, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you have the time, it's not being taken away from you, okay. You have the mic.
I don't know what to talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I love The Amazing Race. So everyone tune in next
all
next
right,
Sunday
the
for the
race.
Final the final episode of The Amazing Race. It will end and one of the teams will win $1 million.
Oh. Wow.
That's pretty cool.
I would not care less. I really could. You know, I just...
Dave,
what do
just
I care
suck.
If someone else wins $1 million?
You'd be happy for them. I'm hoping Grandpa wins.
Why?
Social Security can kick
him. Hey, did you hear about... That's what we can talk about. Did you hear about those guys... The old guys?
Isn't that hilarious? And then I also have to tell you something else. Wait,
well, wait let's talk about the guy.
Wait, let me tell you about the one
all
quick
right.
thing. Because I don't know what was happening, but I woke up. I woke up and, like, I sometimes put my TV on sleep mode.
Uh-huh.
And I woke up just to hear the last 30 seconds of my TV go off.
Yeah.
And they were talking about these new driver's licenses that they're issuing. But they're issuing all these things with all the security
oh, yeah.
because blah, 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 blah. But they're only issuing them to people who were born after 1963. And it's because they say people over 50 aren't considered dangerous. And then, boom, the TV went off and I went, whoa.
Well, that's... people. Now, is that the driver's license or is that ID, national ID
no,
card?
No, the driver's license.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, I don't have to worry about... No, you don't have to worry about me. I'm not,
yeah. Me, I'm on the other side. I'm on the cusp of it. So I would get hit by that.
Well, when were you born? What year?
64. Early 64. So it would just be on the...
I don't know. You will or will... It's you, you're going to be only slightly
younger. Well, I like to be thought of as younger, so why not...
Well, I don't know. They said it was like... I don't remember...
You caught the last 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But speaking of old, you know, wasn't that an amazing thing when those two old men...
Oh, my God.
No, I feel sorry for them.
What's even better is that it wasn't illegal.
It wasn't illegal?
No.
Wait.
The only thing they did illegal was trying to cash his check.
Well, wait. Explain what actually happened in case people don't know.
These three guys were, I guess, kind of friendly but recluses, so they didn't really talk to too many other people in the nursing home.
Uh-huh.
And the one guy died. But his Social Security check came in the mail that day. So they plopped him in an office chair.
Yeah.
And they rolled him down the street to the bank or something. And people thought that was rather, you know, the people who saw it, and especially like an off-duty cop, thought that was kind of odd because he was pretty noticeably dead.
He was noticeably. What if they had used a wheelchair instead of an office chair? If they maybe rented like a wheelchair, do you think they could have gotten away with it?
I don't, well, you know, probably in the office chair, it was probably you know.
Yeah, right. He's like,
I don't think you could prop him very well. But and they said they went into a check cashing place or something. I think that's what it was. And they asked again, and they said, where is he? And he's outside. I don't know. It was, I guess one of the guys raised his hand, so he waved. I don't know. But they said, of course, the guy was outside, attracting quite a crowd.
They left him outside?
I don't know, but they said it was...
If you were going to do that, wouldn't you, like, drive up to the place, pull up...
They probably didn't drive. They probably didn't have a, you know...
Yeah.
Do the drive-through teller. Put some sunglasses on.
Yeah, right. Sunglasses and a blanket. I mean, I never
didn't
saw
Weekend at Bernie's. Didn't they see Weekend at Bernie's?
I have not, but I'm assuming they figured some.
I thought
ways.
That was hilarious, though.
It's a great idea for a movie.
Well, truth is always strange than fiction.
Well, but in this particular case, fiction inspired truth, I guess.
Well, fiction was imitated by truth.
It was, exactly. So I'm assuming their main thing would be fraud, not dead person.
There's nothing wrong with taking a dead person for a ride in a secretarial chair, I guess.
Isn't there?
No.
It's
not like you're transporting a dead body. It's not, you know, there's not a crime in that.
Yeah, no, but let's say, you know, you get these old people, they're married forever, and then one of the people dies, and he just ends up sitting in the bedroom for a year and a half until the smells get to the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
The other person isn't arrestable for something?
Nope.
There's probably some statute on the book somewhere that you can't kind of...
Onward to more weird news, because I heard something else on the news that was really weird.
Tell me what.
New York City is now going to have some pay toilets. Do you know about this?
I saw it on the news. Go.
We go have some pay toilets, and you get put in 25 cents, or I think it's 25 cents, and you get 15 minutes, and it's an actual toilet, and once you open it, goes through a cleaning cycle. It's very hygienic. But one of the news reporters said, well, what happens if you go beyond your 15 minutes? And the guy jokes, well, it locks you in forever. And then you hear the reporter go, it was a woman. And then you hear the woman go, well, actually, it's much worse. Once your 15 minutes are up, and this is exactly what she put it, it was great. She goes, once the 15 minutes are up, the doors open and the eyes of New York are upon you.
Well, 15 minutes is... I mean, you can do a lot in 15 minutes.
But if you have diarrhea...
I've had horrible intermissions of shows.
I just want to know... I mean, it would be nice. Can you, like, keep putting quarters in there?
I doubt it. Because how could you do it from the inside? And if you could, then you just have drug dealers in there all day. You know, I'm assuming...
I know, but if you really don't feel well...
I guess you get up, you open the door... You get out. You
and I wonder if
in.
There's a countdown clock inside.
Oh, that would be smart. Now, that would be, you know, so you know pretty well.
You have 15 seconds before the eyes of New York are upon you.
Yeah, it would be amazing if they had, like, toilet meter maids. Where if you overstayed your allotted time, you got a ticket.
You don't get a ticket. The doors are open.
Yeah, right.
It's worse than a ticket. It's oh so much worse than a ticket.
No, it's not. No. Tickets, you know what car tickets are. I'd rather have somebody looking at me with my pants off than get a $150 ticket.
I would so much rather get a $100 ticket than someone see me on the toilet.
Well, you know, it's just I didn't read the story, but there was something like today or yesterday was a day for people to drop their pants on the subways. That was apparently a kind of a thing.
Was it pants dropping subway day already?
Yeah, apparently. And I missed it. Damn! I always miss the important
things. I hate when half-staff flag day comes.
Only half-staff? Oh, well.
Well, that's what it's called. When you drop your pants.
Half-staff or half-mask? Or half-staff. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, maybe it's half-mask.
Or drop trow is the military thing. Anyway, speaking of, well,
anywho.
It's 22:58 military time, ladies and gentlemen, which means we have to wrap up the little big time and get
put a great
David
big bow on this issue.
Oh, yes. It was a nice one. I think it was very flowed very well. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff Goodman. Stick around, please, Jeff, for Dave's Gone By coming up.
I have
in a
to.
Minute.
I'm glued to the desk.
Excellent. I'm glued here, too. And please, everybody, stay glued to your radios. We've got Dave's Gone By with Inside Broadway and Issa coming up right after this. From the miles of my nautical heart and the heart of my dog's nudicles, you're listening to Dave's Gone By on the station that serves your community, AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I shoot flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Well,
eek!
Eek! There goes the neighborhood, not eek.
No, you told me to squeal if I must.
Oh, you must squeal. That wasn't such a great squeal.
Eek!
Move away from the mic and do a louder, better eek squeal.
Ah!
Ow. Okay. That's not a squeal, that's a shriek. You need to work on that. I think you also broke my headphones. There you go. You just literally broke the headphones in half. Oh, well. That's Jeff Goodman screeching at you. Serves you right. Serves you right. No, oh, you were doing that? I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were doing it. Well, anyway. Our special effect tonight, besides being Jeff, is me, Dave Lefkowitz, here with the 255th episode of Dave's Gone By on this January 13th, 2008. Welcome, everyone, to the Daverhood, to this show, which is going to be pretty special, and this one I can actually promise will be special and good. Now, see, a month ago, our special guest was supposed to be a musician, a wonderful singer-songwriter named Jane Sibbery, who's been in the music business for about 20, 25 years, has written some beautiful songs, has done a couple of really great albums, and I was supposed to call her, and it was a live interview, and I hate scheduling live interviews just for this reason, because turned out, when she was supposed to be calling us, she was still on stage, and couldn't get to us, and forgotten, all that kind of thing. So, apologized profusely, blah, blah, blah.
How dare she forget us?
I know, that some little audience somewhere was more important than being on Dave's Gone By. So, you know, Issa was kind enough to reschedule, and we did, and we spoke last week and had this marvelous freewheeling conversation, and so part one of it is tonight. There's so much that I had to sort of chop it up, because we're also going to play some of her music on the show as well. So tonight, yes, definitely, absolutely, you're going to have the fun of hearing from Issa, a.k.a. or formerly known as Jane Sibbery, on Dave's Gone By. We'll also be doing Inside Broadway, our segment brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater magazine, which tells you all the Broadway and off-Broadway news. Plus, I will be reviewing the latest play by David Henry Hwang. He's the fellow who wrote M. Butterfly, and also the book for the revised musical A Flower Drum Song they did a couple of years ago. Well, he has a new play, a comedy, rather loosely, not so loosely, based on his own life. And it's called Yellow Face. It's playing at the Public Theater, and I will be reviewing it on Inside Broadway in just a couple of minutes. But first, let's very quickly get through our sponsors. Jeff, do you want to do that for us?
Okay, MortgagesRock.com.
Yes, that's one of them. What about them?
They rock.
They do. MortgagesRock.com tells you everything you need to know about getting financing, loans, or being able to get them for other people, and you get the commission. MortgagesRock.com.
Hewlett Minuteman Press.
10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Every job, big or small, at Hewlett Minuteman Press.
And the next to Loman Shoes, so there.
Easy to get to. Okay, quickly, what's next?
Fancy Schmancy Balloons?
Yeah, let's skip over them. Now, what's her phone number?
Don't know.
Fantasy Schmancy Balloons is 797-3229, area code 516, and people should call them because if you have a party or a bar mitzvah or a wedding or any kind of event, you're going to want it to look great, and you're going to have nice balloons and centerpieces, and Fantasy Schmancy Balloons can do that. 516-797-3229. And finally,
Performing Arts Insider,
the Bible of Broadway. for 65 years now. This is the journal that people in the theater industry use to know what's going on Broadway, off-Broadway, in the cabaret clubs. It tells you everything, when things are opening, who's in everything, who the designers are, how to contact the actors through their agents and the press agents. It's all in Performing Arts Insider each and every month, sometimes twice a month, 21 issues a year, or you can go for the monthly subscription, and if you do, there's a big sale for Dave's Gone By listeners. It's $120 for 12 issues, and it's usually about $14 or $15 an issue on the stands, so you're really getting a nice savings. Go to davesgoneby.org for details on that, or performingartsinsider.com for details on Performing Arts Insider. Well, we want to get right to the rest of this episode, so we're going to do a little bit of commercial business here, then we'll be back with Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By. Do not even think of going away. There is a season, turn, 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 turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn, turn, turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, we go inside Broadway pretty much every week on Dave's Gone By because I love the theater and also because I'm somewhat involved with Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine that sponsors this segment. And also I like to tell people what's happening culturally on our stages. Well,
you're so cultural.
I am, aren't I? Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, I have wonderful news. Now, see, this is that time of year. You know, it's a fairly quiet time as far as things opening and closing. Well, closing, no, but things opening and theater news. But it's also a quiet time because all the tourists have left Manhattan, which leaves a lot of the big shows that were doing amazing business in December hurting a little and wanting audiences. And so this is the time, folks, if you want to see some big Broadway shows, to go and try and get the discount tickets. And it's also the time between January 21st and January 27th, so it's a week from now, it's Live Theater Week Off-Broadway. You can find out about it at offbroadway.org. There are some restrictions, but basically there's no little paper twofers or anything like that. It's two-for-one tickets. And these are some of the Off-Broadway shows that are part of this promotion. Altar Boys, Celia, The Life and Music of Celia Cruz, The Fantastics, Dai, D-A-I, that's the Israeli one-woman show, Gazillion Bubble Show, Hunting and Gathering, I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change, New Jerusalem, the David Ives play, Stomp is on there, My Mother's Italian, My Father's Jewish, and I'm in Therapy, My First Time, there's a few others. Go to offbroadway.org, and it's, yes, there are some restrictions, maybe you can't get it on a Saturday night or something, but for the most part, it's two-for-one tickets, theater night live, off-Broadway, January 21st through January 27th.
What a great deal.
Yeah. I mean, considering that off-Broadway tickets are now $70 or something like that, if you can get an off-Broadway ticket for $20, $30, that's pretty good.
And oh, yeah.
So do it up. Now, as far as Broadway news, well, not much really to talk about except that we had a big Broadway opening 3 days ago.
We certainly did.
And did you see the reviews of The Little Mermaid?
No, I did not.
They were not, for the most part, very nice.
They were under the sea.
Well put, yeah. This is Ben Brantley. Ben Brantley wrote a classic. We don't get that much anymore, especially even for the New York Times. He can be rough, he can be picky and whatever, but you don't get those real kind of vicious reviews where there's a jokey put down in every single paragraph or sentence.
Oh, he did it here.
He opened the review, Ben Brantley, the head critic of the New York Times, with "Loved the shoes, loathed the show," and it was downhill from there. Because he talked about these skating things.
I heard
things
the set is unbelievable.
Unbelievably good or unbelievably?
No, unbelievably good.
He called the show a musical blunderbuss.
Oh my God.
And he said, "The motto of this production could be, you can never go broke underestimating the taste of preschoolers." Ouch.
I give it a C.
Now, and I looked at some of the other reviews, and for the most part, they were a little kinder, but they were still very, very underwhelmed by The Little Mermaid. So it makes me wonder, is The Little Mermaid going to be in trouble?
Did The Philadelphia Inquirer give it a thumbs up?
I missed The Philly Inquirer, but Newsday was like, eh.
Well, she's a weemer.
USA Today wasn't too bad. USA Today said it wasn't great, but it was cute. It was nice. So they were about the best review I saw of it, although I only saw a couple. But now that, are they going to have, do you think, another Tarzan on their hands? Or is it going to be like Legally Blonde, where the audience is so built in with teenage girls that it'll do okay?
I think that's going to be the case.
You think it's pre-booked, it's like pre-sold?
They're pulling 100% business already. Well,
are they really?
Reviews, sure.
Huh. Well, yeah, but Tarzan was doing really good business for a few weeks, too. And then the bottom dropped out of their...
Tarzan was not a little girl's musical, it was a little boy's musical.
Okay, good point. And the little boys just were like, I'd rather see Lion King or something else. Yeah. And if you come to think about it, the shows, you got Wicked up there now, you've got... what's the other one that's really good? Legally Blonde, and there's another one even for that's girl appropriate or girl like on Broadway that's doing
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins, right? So that's the new demographic, and I guess Mermaid appeals to it. So will Ben Brantley's and other people's reviews make a dent or a?
I don't think so. I think this is pretty much has a big built-in audience. I mean, they closed Beauty and the Beast
after 15 years.
I know, but to open this.
Oh, yeah.
And if this doesn't work, then Shrek will come in.
Oh, that's, yeah, good point. Well, they'll bring Beauty and the Beast back, just like they did with Les Mis. Well, I mean, that wasn't Disney, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Anyway, I've got just a couple more minutes here on this part of Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By, so I wanted to tell everybody fairly quickly about the new David Henry Hwang play called Yellow Face. Now, Hwang, very best known for winning the Tony and... maybe a Pulitzer, I don't, maybe not, for M. Butterfly, a very famous play about the diplomat who falls in love with a Chinese woman who's actually a Chinese man playing a Chinese woman, and it was really well done, and John Lithgow became pretty famous from it, and et cetera, and so forth. Wong is a very good playwright. He's one of our best, actually. He's written some terrific Wong acts. He's also did a brilliant play on Broadway that flopped called Golden Child. That I think should get another.
I love that one.
Wasn't that a good play?
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, nobody saw it, but it was damn good. I didn't like... he was actually, speaking of Tarzan, he was the one who did the bad book on that. So with musicals, he's a little iffy. He also did the revision of Flower Drum Song 2 years ago. But as far as plays go, he's really fine. So Face Value was a play that he wrote about 10 years ago, and it had to do with something that happened when he was doing M. Butterfly, and he went into these, this M. Butterfly, well, actually, I'm confusing things, forgive me here. He was kind of involved, because of M. Butterfly, he was seen as a spokesperson for the Asian community, right, in the entertainment Asian community. So when, speaking of the Les Miserables people, when, what's the one with the helicopter?
Miss Saigon.
Thank you. Miss Saigon was playing on
Don't
Broadway.
Don't worry, I'll be here for all your little questions.
That's perfect. That's what you're here for, Jeff. Just feed me the info. So Miss Saigon was playing in London, and the Asian community was shocked and angered that playing the engineer, that kind of key role of the narrator person and the slimy guy who is the connective tissue of the musical.
He had an American dream.
Yeah, and he was an English actor named Jonathan Pryce, with not a hint of Asian or Eurasian blood in him.
But that's also because he originated the role in London.
Well, yeah, but even in London...
And won all sorts of awards for it.
Yeah, and Cameron McIntosh was saying, Jonathan Pryce is my man, he's the most brilliant, the only actor who can play this role the way it's meant to be played. And the Asian community was saying, you're kidding me, right? You can't find a male Asian actor
right.
between 25 and 55 anywhere...
Well, you know what the problem really was?
What?
The King and I closed down the block. Everyone was out of work.
So, there were protests, and McIntosh threatened to close this, not even bring it to Broadway. Things resolved. Miss Saigon came to Broadway. Jonathan Pryce was in it. He won the Tony. He was brilliant. And it left David Henry Hwang feeling a little ambivalent on both sides of it, because he understood both sides of the argument, that Asian actors can't get enough work and they're being discriminated against, but he's also, how can he not be for artistic freedom as a writer? So he wrote a farce about that, called Face Value, about casting someone who should have been Asian but wasn't Asian. It's this whole mixed up thing, and anyway, it bombed. It played out of town a little bit, got bad reviews, and then closed before it opened in New York, right in previews, and was his worst flop to date. Well, it's obviously something that has stayed with him, because he wrote now a play called Yellow Face, which is a comedy based on what happened, but it's not a farce, it's actually what's happened, but it's also fictional. He has whole other characters come in there and a whole other side story. But it's also got some wonderful material, some of the best material in the play, about Wong's relationship with his father and the true story of his father who was an immigrant, came to San Francisco, came to California, fell in love with America. He loved the idea of America back when he was in China. And he ended up becoming a major, major financier, an owner of a bank. And then was, ironically enough, and this is a true story, you can look it up on Google in the New York Times, was accused of funneling money back and forth from China. And
you're lying to them.
Well, anyway, Wong factors all of this stuff into Yellowface, which is half true, half not. We're getting a lot of these plays this year where, like, the Farnsworth Invention and Frost Nixon.
That's because it's the end of an administration that's been giving us half-truths.
Nicely put. And so, if you're going to take Yellow Face at face value, as it were, well, you can't really do that. You have to just take it as an entertaining play. And it sure is. You know, there's no sets. It's all done. It's at the Public Theater.
There's no sex.
Well, very little sex anyway, either. And did you know Wong straight? Had no idea.
Who?
Totally threw me. The David Henry Hwang.
Yeah.
Or at least he is in this play. See, they have another actor playing David Henry. It all ties in.
It's B.D. Wong who's gay.
Oh, totally. And then they ended up getting Wong for Face Value when it came to Broadway. And it's all I'm saying is I wish you guys could all go and see Yellowface, because it is very funny, and it's very has a lot to say about all the stuff that we were just talking about. It isn't perfect, and there are parts that drag on a little bit, and then there are parts where you sort of wonder, is he throwing this in and muddying the waters of something that should be a lot clearer? What I like about the play also is it doesn't need the sets. It has the costumes, because it has this dynamic of the modern play where it's filled with narrations and phone calls and people emailing each other and newspaper quotes. It's about the isolation and the sound bites of our modern culture as much as it is about Wong and his experience writing the plays and his relationship with his dad. So if you didn't get to see Yellowface, hopefully you'll either get to read it or there'll be local places that will start to do it now that it just closed at the Public Theater. But definitely a big thumbs up on that, and a big thank you to David Henry Hwang for writing plays like this that are so fun to watch and fun to talk about. And that's really what it's all about inside Broadway. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Thank you. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this very, very special Sunday night. It was supposed to be a Sunday night about a month ago, but it didn't happen then, but I'm thrilled that it is happening now. We have with us on the phone a pretty legendary singer-songwriter, formerly known as James Sibbery, currently known as Issa, and still making some pretty amazing music. Issa, welcome to the neighborhood.
Me bad, Dave. I'm sorry I missed your last interview. It was my fault.
Oh, okay. Well, don't apologize to me. Apologize to the listeners, and they forgive you, and we love you, and it's all okay now. So you were in a concert or something, like you couldn't even get to...
I was on stage, if that's any kind of excuse.
Well, what songs were you doing while we were waiting for you? Do you remember what your set list was?
It was the end of the show, therefore I was doing Walk on Water,
uh-huh,
which people might have heard before, and then the last song was a new song called We Hello. And I didn't do it because I was in Montreal. I did it in English-speaking countries, too.
Okay.
Countries. Did I say countries? Yes.
Okay. Well, no, it's cool. I'm thrilled that you're here tonight. And just so much stuff to talk about, both about your work and about, well, your life, even though I'm sure you're pretty darn sick of answering questions about your big life change a couple of years ago. But I guess one more time, it wouldn't hurt to go through that again. But why don't we start from the very, very early part? In fact, one of the records that you released a few years ago was your first recordings when you were still like a teenager. So you came to music pretty early, I assume.
Yeah, I did. I've always played piano by ear, and I didn't learn guitar till I was 16. But yeah, it's always been a surprise that other people didn't do it all the time like I did.
And did you pick it up pretty quick when you were doing the guitar and then piano?
Yeah, I play by ear, so I can pick up most things and play it.
See, I play by my fingers, and it takes me forever. I should probably do the ear thing instead.
Well, how many ears do you have? It helps if you have...
Well, I have 2 ears and 10 fingers, so I should be 8. It's the other 8 fingers that are getting in the way. I think that's the big problem right there.
Well, if you'd like to talk to my mother, she's right here. She can tell you about when I played piano when I was young.
Are you kidding me? Your mom is there?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Put your mom on the phone. I get 2-for-1 tonight.
You do, and I just happened to be in a hotel room with my mom, and here she is. She can tell you whether the rumors about me are true or not.
Okay.
So I introduce you to Shirley Stewart. This is my mother.
Oh, hi, Shirley Stewart. Hi. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Shirley Stewart. Boy, I mean, we hear about celebrities like Britney Spears and having these horrible things, and then you come across a celebrity who's in a hotel room with her mom. I mean, that's...
Oh, We're just having a ball.
Well, that's terrific. Are you on tour with her, or are you just visiting, or what's the deal?
No, we're in a small town outside of Toronto. We came here to celebrate Fred Sibbery's 90th birthday with all our relatives.
Fred being her, your
uncle.
Okay, cool. Just checking.
And the husband of the aunt that she admired so much.
Uh-huh.
So we've been here with all the relatives.
Well, that's great.
What would you like to know about Jane?
this is bizarre. Okay, I'm okay. What do you remember when she came to you and said, "Mommy, I wrote a poem," or "Mommy, I wrote a song," and you said, "Oh, that's nice. Let me hear it."
Oh yes, I do. When she started composing, she'd be doing her thing, and we'd all be in bed, and I'd hear these little footsteps on the stairs, and I'd hear this little voice saying, "Mom, are you asleep?" And I'd go down to the kitchen, and she'd play me her latest song, and I'd listen to it, and I'd say, "That's very nice, but I need to hear it again," so she might play it two or three more times for me.
Cool.
When I should have been in bed and asleep.
And did you, I assume in those years you encouraged her, but was it tougher to encourage her when she became sort of a teenager and young adult, and were you worried, oh, she needs to get a regular job, or was that never a consideration kind of a thing?
No, she got her honors degree in microbiology from Guelph University, and when she had her gown and her cap on and her diploma in her hand, she walked down to her dad and handed him the diploma and said, "Now I'm going to do music for the rest of my life."
And her dad said, or did his jaw just drop and say,
"No,
here's a checkbook," and no, what?
She's always been interested in music, and she played in cafes when she was at university.
Mm-hmm.
She took music lessons, and she did finish the theory, but the practical, nobody could really teach her because she had a good ear.
Yeah.
But
I'm curious. It's probably not a fair question to ask, but do you have a favorite Jane Sibbery / Issa song?
I like One More Color.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's so many favorites.
Well,
I love the hockey because it reminds me of my youth, and I think that came from stories that I told her of where I grew up, which was on the edge of a pond.
Oh, okay.
Grenadier Pond. She's a marvelous daughter. I'm really lucky.
Okay.
She is. She really is. She has included her dad and me in everything, all the way along.
Well, even obviously, you're right there with her, and that's. I have one more question for you, and then I kind of, you know, obviously want to get back to talking to her. But how did you feel about the life change a couple of years ago? I assume you had to be supportive, but did you look at it and go, you know, where is she going with this, or was it like, oh, you know, that's kind of a nice idea?
Well, I was sort of relieved because she really worked hard when she had her own business, Sheba.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't have enough space, I didn't think, because I used to try and help her with the, you know, the office, the odd jobs, and when she didn't have time to clean, I used to try and help with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, people, it's an all-consuming job to run a record company. I mean, literally, mailing everything and getting the silk screens and the T-shirts and the mugs and what have you, and then having to concentrate on some point on music. I mean, where's
That's
the
right.
room for that? Yeah.
It was a nightmare at times, but she managed.
Mm-hmm.
She's very innovative, and I'm very proud of her.
And do you call her Issa now or Jane? I'm wondering. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Really? What, do you just say, hey there?
When I answered the phone this morning, when she called me, I said, I started to say Jane Abell, and then I changed it to Issa.
So it might take another couple of months before it really totally, totally still sinks in. Jane Abell. Is Jane a shortening of Jane Abell, or is that just a little nickname?
That's their nickname.
Oh.
Well, my son changed his name, and if you're going to change your life and your lifestyle, according to the Kabbalah, changing your name's all right. Right thing to do.
No offense, but what are you... You're not Jewish, are you?
No!
Okay, well, you mentioned the Kabbalah.
Well, I studied it. Nothing wrong with studying it. I studied it for 4 years.
Oh, my gosh. So you're not quite the typical, middle-class mom housewife either, obviously, if you're studying the Kabbalah for 4 years. So,
well, my children have included me in their life, and it certainly broadened me.
That's wonderful. That's really terrific.
It is wonderful. I'm a very fortunate woman.
Well, I feel very fortunate to be able to talk to you, Issa's mom, but I still, obviously want to talk a bit to Issa, if she's still there. So if we could get her back on the phone, I would love to talk to her.
Yes,
I don't know if you have a
right here.
Two-line thing.
Absolutely stunning.
Okay. Thank you. Well, by the way, in the neighborhood here, we're talking to Issa and Issa's mom, who was really, really fun to talk to. But I think Issa's back on the line now.
Yes.
Hey, welcome back. I didn't ask her anything too personal or upsetting. Don't worry. I didn't freak your mom out in any fashion. At least I hope not. Or is she glaring at you as we're...
No.
Okay.
No, I do want to clarify one thing. It doesn't matter what my name is. Whenever I call her, she usually says, "Who?"
Thanks, Mom. Yeah, that's nice. Now, aside as we've gone through the fact that you wanted to divest of running Sheba Records and having all this, but artists were forever complaining and still do about big record companies. Now, you were part of one of them for a while with Warner Brothers, so you dealt with all that, and then started your own company, and then that became too much. So you've seen both sides of it. What made it really impossible? Was it the digital revolution that kind of made running an old-fashioned record company passé? I know, it's kind of a weird question.
No, the digital revolution, I had different things happening with Sheba that weren't just music. I was trying to do different things through it, including a design line and having doing more visual things like film, etc. But so that still it meant more than just me doing it and running an office and managing people. It was really interesting, and it was a crucible in which I really learned a lot about myself and acquired a lot of compassion for other people running businesses and doing it well. And Warner Brothers, I had more understanding of what they had created and the good parts about it. So the digital, I could still be in that situation now even if I had just downloads, because it was more than just, putting music out there.
Would you ever... I saw a little thing on your website where, in your blog part, you said that more and more musicians are being offered nice packages and sign-up fees and things by record labels, and they're saying, no, thanks, we're doing it ourselves, and that's a good thing. Would you ever go back to a big label, or we're beyond that forever?
No, sure I would. If the vision of the label was in alignment with my values, et cetera, sure. Just because it's a big label doesn't mean that it's a bad label, that it's bad. And I think we're going to see more leadership, from people who, see it quality before profit or earth before profit or all that, or operating on a higher level before profit. And then that will be a new way of having success, that it will bring profit on it in its own way. I think you'll see that kind of thinking coming into companies that can be big.
In our lifetime.
Yeah. As long as we live long. But, don't you? I mean...
I hope so. I mean, it'd be lovely.
But I think it'll be different than what a normal label is now. And when I did talk to different labels after I left Warner Brothers, and then I had Shiva, and then I did talk to labels after that, too, because I was creating music that I still wanted to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did still talk to people, but my lawyer and I came up with what we thought was a really win-win contract for the new millennium for labels, you know, for systems that were using music as its...
In what way is it a win? Are you talking about the pricing system now?
With the label? No, it's just the ownership of rights.
Ah, okay.
And having things results-oriented so that if the results weren't there, that would be reflected in adjusting the deal. And things that were results-oriented on both sides. But they're very one-sided. And also, you have systems that can't change necessarily that easily. It takes time.
Yeah, but also, again, I mean, to be devil's advocate here, if you have something that's results-oriented, doesn't that force the performer to be more commercial, so to speak?
No. What would the results be from the performer?
Well, the results would be how many downloads, how many purchases, how many T-shirts. And if the performer's making more music that can be played on more radio stations and more people who are not necessarily cult advocates of that performer are into it, then that music will quote-unquote sell. I mean, it's the oldest, obviously, commerce-related story in the book. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. But when they sign you, they're signing you... I mean, it has to be clear that... they know what they're getting, and that I guess you would define your parameters as clearly as you could, saying that you're not going to change much from the way you are, but if they think that that's a valuable thing for them to work with, then they know what they're getting, and then results on their end would be that the budget for marketing for this record would be...
Now, that's a good point.
And that they would have this many ads and this many... at a certain level, media format, and they'd have this many units in the stores.
Now, see, that makes sense to me, yeah.
And then if it doesn't, if they start losing money and they have met their requirements, then both of you have to say, well, it's not in the air, and then we should lose-lose at the same time.
Okay, I get that. And also, and it takes into account that some artists will have a fan base of 10,000, and they don't have to have a fan base of 100,000 or a million. You can start from different levels and tiers and understand, that they'll relatively stay in those places, and that's okay, as long as both the company and the artist are working from the same vision of where that artist is.
Yeah, and artists have to be more accountable for themselves and informed about, that a company is not a charity.
Hmm.
It's not an altruistic thing. It's meant to be a business, but there's a way to have a balanced transaction between both parties. But it's not meant to be... I mean, Warner Brothers lost a lot of money through me, and the advances they were giving me were way too high. And
I've never heard an artist say something like that. Never.
Oh.
Well,
they were... And at a certain point, I really felt like I wasn't pulling my weight, and that doesn't feel good.
Wow.
And so when they wanted to renegotiate the advances, I said yes. And then they added that they wanted to insist that I work with a producer, and then I said no. At that point, I just finished, I think, When I Was a Boy, and then I did Maria.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt... they didn't get me, and that I actually was a good producer.
Well, When I Was a Boy is I think, and I think a lot of people think, a real masterpiece. I mean, not that you haven't done great work since or before, but something about that album remains really, really special. So I can understand your attitude of being like, hey, I can do this. I can do this just fine by myself.
Yeah, and that, well, I really think what makes someone, that success comes from my definition of success, which I think can be a commercial definition, comes from something being as undistilled as possible. That's what gives it durability. And as long as it touches people somehow, and so if it's heart-oriented, to me that's a pretty good formula. But it's rare that, I mean, these stories are so old, where someone has a hit and then the record company almost shoots itself in the foot by not getting records into the stores in time. You know, or doing things, making moves that everyone else is saying, well, I don't get it. They deliver, or they just cause themselves to lose a lot of money when they seem to want money. And then they do things that make them lose money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think success comes from making someone more unique than the opposite. So to me, I would really admire a record company person who listened to a demo tape and then sent it back and said, I really think you could be more you than what I hear here.
Hmm.
You know?
Well, maybe that takes a Clive Davis or something. I don't know.
I don't know much about him, but I don't think it happens very often, if ever.
But then again, when they get a demo tape, how do they know who the you is? You know, they have to live with a person and see them in concert 5 times or something just to know who the you might be. And see them
well,
backstage.
They've done a fair bit of that if they sign them, but you can tell when people are trying to sound like Alanis Morissette or whatever they think is the thing that will move them into alignment with commercial success. You can smell a rat. People can smell a rat. The everyday person is probably the best person for smelling a rat.
The what? I'm sorry, I missed that. The what?
The everyday person. I think I have so much respect for everyday people, and often
can't
articulate it. Yeah, but they know when something's off, even if they don't know how to express it. But people are so smart. Anyway, they can tell when someone, they can smell the truth and they can smell fear.
Minute Man, the superheroes of photocopying, printing and binding. Minute Man, no job too big or small. Minute Man, family run since 1975. Minute Man, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, next to the new Lowman's shoe store. Tell them they've sent you for 10% off. Minuteman, hero of our photocopying dreams.
Hello everyone, this is Issa, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
It is kind of fascinating to talk about the business part of all this, and the fact that you, even before Radiohead, even though they got all the notoriety for it, you were doing the whole pricing as you please thing before they were, which is, you know, go to the website, and if you want to download a song, pay what you think is worth, pay what you can afford. And this set the whole industry on its ear, because they were thinking, well, everybody will just pay nothing, or will they? So what's been your experience with that to date?
Well, it's an old model. I mean, it's a flexible interface so that when someone comes to your table in the bazaar, you try to make sure they don't walk away without something that they would enjoy unless they really don't want it. So you say, you try to find the right price for them. I mean, it's the same principle.
Well, no, in a bazaar.
In this case,
sorry?
But in this case, it's the person coming to the table who decides their price, and that's fine. No.
I mean, actually, in a bazaar, they're going to try and sell you anything, and if you don't want it, they'll just mark it down. I mean, it's kind of a little different. You're, at least people coming to your site will probably want to get something from you. That's why they're there. And I guess, as you say, then it's good to find a reasonable negotiation. And that has worked for you so far?
Well, I mean, when I had fixed pricing for downloads, I'd say I'm making a bit more now. But right now, I think, for me, I'm making much less with downloads than I did when I was selling CDs. But in the end, when I had my own little company, the costs were so high for the manufacturing and mail order and staff and everything that went into it that it wasn't worth it. But I guess maybe you're right. I'll have to think about that market thing. But the flexible interface thing is based on a respect for people's sense of balance, and I suppose that's maybe one difference anyway.
Well, here's a question. People, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you listen to music, do you go on iTunes, or do you go to these different websites, and do you pay anything, or is all the music that you personally listen to free?
When I would download from Napster, and I downloaded a lot, I loved it. It was so perfect, because when someone said, why don't you do this a cover version of this song for us, then I would go to Sam the Record Man, and then I would, you know, spend $200 on every version I could find, and that would be one song on a whole record that I didn't listen to. So downloading was just so efficient and quick, so I loved it. But what I would do was, I can't say I did it by the end, but for a long time I would send $2 to the Sweet Relief Fund that Victoria Williams had. So I just decided for myself what I wanted to pay, because no one was set up to, like, pay what you want or whatever. There was no option, so I just decided myself how to balance it, but on my website now, people can balance it there, or they can. My favorite part is that they can balance it with me, or they can balance it on a wider level, you know, by buying, you know, an extra CD at a young band's show or something like that, or talk to an elder for longer than they really have time for and give them energy, people can pay back on a wider level, and that's just perfectly fine with me.
So it goes to that 1990s thing of pay it forward that well, people kind of made fun of, but seemed like a pretty nice idea, actually, of doing it. Well, in my culture, it'd be mitzvahs or good deeds, or just, you know, having something done right and then paying it back by doing something good for somebody else. I mean, I think that's okay.
Yeah, and then if you do it for someone else and there's no measurement, you don't know if the person paid it forward or not, so you just send it out into the universe cleanly and clearly. Don't you think?
Well, no, I think that's. I mean, and speaking of sending things out into the universe and sending them out there, I do kind of wonder, when you were divesting your stuff and you were saying, I need to leave more simply, I need to get all this clutter and stuff out of my life so I can live and be an artist and feel a sense of personal freedom, what were, like, one or two of the really toughest things that you had to let go?
The last things I've been able to let go of, and I still haven't let go of some of them, are, like, and maybe I won't, because I didn't want to be really hard on myself and, you know, rip up my roots faster than respectful to myself, but slowly I've been able to let go of things like, on New Year's Eve this year, I went to my locker and finally went through my tapes from, my cassette tapes from all my first records up to, I guess, Maria, like, from my first record through when I was a boy, and all the cassettes of my early versions, and just playing the song on the piano, and those were quite precious to me. But then I thought, I don't think I'll ever listen to them. They're precious, but I don't have to have them.
What did you do?
It doesn't
do?
Stop them from being precious.
Yeah.
By getting rid of them.
Well, I mean, you can get rid of them by giving them to, say, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or did you just, what did you do with them?
I went, well, While everyone else was partying, I was going into warehouse parking lots looking for dumpsters.
You're kidding me.
No.
You dumped them?
Yeah, I thought there was a certain arrogance to thinking someone else would like to spend 40 hours of their life listening through to all that stuff. I don't know. It just seems...
It doesn't mean
I haven't kept some things, and they'll go probably to the National Library in Ottawa.
Okay. That's true. I mean, imagine if somebody felt that way, if Bob Dylan one day said, you know, I've done enough. I think I'll just find a dumpster somewhere and take these 1958 Woody Guthrie songs I was doing, and who needs to hear them? I mean, hello. I'm sorry. I just that strikes me as a little too. No offense, but yipes.
You mean masters?
Well, or even just these homemade little cassettes of you at the of stuff that you can never get back. Of stuff that isn't somewhere else recorded and saved.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like throwing out
I think it's sort of arrogant to think that they should be...
Or maybe you'll have... I don't know if you won't have kids, right? But maybe... do you think you'll ever have kids, or...
Well, if I had kids, I wouldn't want... I would want them to have a life. And I don't want someone doing a book on me and a... I just don't want to take up... I put out the best that I could, and I...
Hmm.
I don't know, I don't want to be one of... I don't want to be responsible for people not having a life.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Okay. And on a lighter note, I mean, one thing that I was kind of surprised is that something that you couldn't sell, that you still held on to, was your collection of Miles Davis CDs. And yet you keep them in storage. Which is like this.
I gave them away to someone at the locker beside mine.
Oh, okay. Because if you're keeping the CDs in storage, that's as good as not having them anyway. I mean, the point of CDs is that they're, you know, you can listen to them, you take them out. But I guess that you can listen to online if you, you know, through iTunes or whatever. Yeah.
Sure, there's a bit of a distortion in that it sounds like I've gotten rid of stuff, but I do have a lot of stuff on my laptop.
And you have a car, you drive.
No, I let my car go. No, I rent if I really need a car.
Okay.
And I pay a lot more for things because I don't keep. For example, say when you get a cold, then you get pills and this and that, and maybe a hot water bottle, and then you have it, and then you have to cart it around with you. So I end up giving away lots of things and then buying them afresh. Next time, so all the just in cases that.
Yeah, no, that I get. I mean, you don't stock up at Costco on toilet paper. I mean, you get two rolls and boom, there you are, or not because you're living in hotels half the time. So, I mean, that you get free. I'm assuming. I'm not trying to make light, but there is a kind of a humorous.
Yeah, so far, it's free.
Oh,
toilet paper is free in hotels. I don't know.
Well,
sometimes it's so fancily. Hold it up, though. You don't really feel you should be using it, but...
Well, in your idea of the universe, though, maybe hotels will start thinking so ecologically and green conscious that they'll start using recycled toilet paper, but have to charge people for it. So...
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. I think it's pretty... it's coming, but the people who stay in hotels usually have money, and it seems like they should... Anything in a luxury situation should be especially green conscious because. But green hotels are coming. But yes, it's pretty slow. It's pretty upsetting, and you have to cart things out of hotel rooms.
You watch the slow train moving through the city late at night, adjusting back. And forth again, the darkness and street lights. I know that you're feeling bad, but I'm glad you didn't. Easy to get caught up But you know you can't always, you can't always, you can't always walk away.
And the earth. In 2007, I created Shalom Damn It, Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour. It's a TV show by Jews, about Jews, and for everybody. It airs Wednesday morning, 7:30 on Cablevision Channel 20. You can also watch episodes on YouTube. Just search under my name, Saul Solomon, or Shalom Damn It. And God saw that it was good, and you'll see, it's great! Yes, the wonderful Rabbi Saul Solomon, every Wednesday morning on Channel 20, Woodbury Cablevision, catch Shalom Damn It, or you can watch the first 9 episodes on YouTube anytime you want to. Just look for Shalom Damn It. And also look for all the sponsors of this wonderful program, Dave's Gone By, that I'm happy to bring to you every week on Sunday nights. Our sponsors include, Jeff, do you want to do it, or should I?
You go right ahead, Dave.
Unit Minuteman Press, 10% off all jobs, big or small, at Unit Minuteman Press on Broadway in Hewlett. They're the copy kings. Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway, and this big, big discount for Dave's Gone By listeners who want an annual subscription, the monthly subscription, only $10 an issue for the 12 issues. Check it out at performingartsinsider.com. Also, MortgagesRock.com, the place to learn about how to get and give mortgages and loans. MortgagesRock.com. And finally, Jeff, come on, you do your own.
Fancy schmancy balloons.
For people who want to decorate their parties, to have great centerpieces, to have balloons, to really make the thing look festive and nice, check them out at 516-797-3229. 797-3229. Remember that, you know, I want to get your letters. I want to hear what you think of this program and your suggestions for other shows.
No, so, we only want to hear nice things.
Or negative criticism in a positive way at davesgoneby@aol.com.
Do we want to hear from prisoners?
Kind of.
Okay.
If they're nice. Actually, I almost had an interview with a prisoner, but that isn't going to happen. So instead, what we have next week, I'll explain that. We don't have time to talk about it right now. But And Dave's Gone By at AOL.com is the web address to write to me, and davesgoneby.org is the URL to check out everything about this weekly radio program, Sunday nights at 11. Remember to watch Dave's Gone By on TV Friday nights at 7:30, also on Channel 20. And I know they've been showing the same episode over and over, but they'll have new ones pretty soon. And remember, you can hear 25 older episodes, pardon me, of Dave's Gone By anytime by going to the website davesgoneby.org. Big thank yous this week to my wonderful wife, Joyce Weil, to my friend Jeff Goodman for being here. Jeff, you want to say something quick?
Nope. Something quick.
Okay. I want to thank Mr. and Mrs. Weil. It was very nice, and they gave me sort of an early birthday present, which is present.
They gave you Joyce.
That's the best present of all. And also, big thank you to Carla at Fleming Artists, who set up the Issa interview, and to Issa herself for being...
And Issa's mom.
And Issa's mom. That's right. Thank you, man. She was on the show. Issa, more of her next week, more music, more talk, and it gets even more fun next week. This was a lot about the business.
I just can't wait.
Oh, stop it. No, next week we actually talk more about her personal life and you know, all the stuff she's given up, and it really gets kind of freewheeling.
It gets sexy.
She psychoanalyzes me. It gets kind of creepy. So next week, January 20th, Sunday night, Issa, part 2. We will be back. Yeah, sorry.
We could while away the hours.
I while away the hours with my wife. Get it?
No.
Anyway, we'll be back.
If we only had a brain.
Next Sunday night, January 20th, 2008, with a 256th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night.
Can I get to say my name?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm trying to get out of here real quick because the gospel people are chomping at the bit to go on the air here.
It's Dave Lefkowitz and Jeff Goodman.
Eases and kisses.
And Gone By.